And welcome to everybody over on YouTube, where I think I am as well. Kyle, you're here on YouTube as well.
Hello.
And we have Rob, Gila, and Alex.
Hello.
Hello.
And we are definitely on YouTube.
We are starting. Let's see. There we go.
Okay, good, good.
Yes.
Well, everything's working just fine then.
Are we loud? Are we too loud?
Yeah, you know, we're either too loud, too low, or just not making any sense. But do the best we can.
I think we're at a good volume over there, but, you know, let us know in the chat if we aren't.
Yeah. Alex, I still can't believe you broke your foot, but thanks for being with us. It's great to know you're recovering.
Yeah, thank you, and wish me luck tomorrow. It's going to be, you know, it's never pleasant, but...
Now, can I ask, why are you in Pennsylvania and not in New York City, where some of the finest hospitals and doctors... Wait, I thought you were in Pennsylvania.
Actually, I am in Pennsylvania. Oh, yeah, but are. I'm not in my normal place. I'm because actually we found quite a good surgeon in Pennsylvania, and my sister-in-law is a doctor out here in Pennsylvania. She's an anesthesiologist, and so she was able to connect us with some of her colleagues and fit us in and get us in rather quickly. And this doctor, this is his bread and butter type of stuff. So that's where we're going. You know, they're going to hopefully roll out the red carpet for me tomorrow. Or rather, hopefully the carpet isn't red when I'm coming back from it.
That's
that's the thing. But, this just it really stinks. It's amazing how everything can change in quite literally the blink of an eye.
That's true. That's without anyone else even being involved. It's just basically making a left turn. What happened to the other golf cart? Did that ever reach you? The one that you were turning in front of?
No, that other golf cart was just it was just coming down the road and probably saw two people fly out of our golf cart and thought, wow, that was unusual. But I will tell you, there are some interesting things that have come out of this, too. So in speaking with the surgeon who was performing the first surgery on my leg and my foot, he asked me, what do I do for a living and where do I live and whatnot? And I told him, look, I'm a cybersecurity attorney. And he said, oh, well, I find that really, really interesting. And I said, okay. Why? It turns out that the hospital that I was in had a massive ransomware event the year before. So he had tons of questions for me about ransomware affecting hospitals and the threat actors and why is their customer service so good and all these kinds of things. So we wound up bonding quite a bit over that. And I become friends with the surgeon who fixed my foot and put these rods through it the first time. And when I go back to Florida, I think we'll probably end up getting together. And so we, made a friend through a ransomware event of a hospital and a golf cart incident. So that's kind of unusual. And then, interestingly enough, we ended the show talking about hope. And one of the nurses that came into my room to help me when I was recovering, he asked me again, what do you do in New York? He's a cybersecurity attorney and, blah, blah, blah. And, we wound up talking about hacking and things. And then he started telling me that he's really interested in lock picking and would try to go to these lock picking conferences that were only open. Well, actually, we're not lock picking conferences, but they were security conferences. Mm-hmm. That were run only for people that were wholesalers of certain locks, and they would talk about the new generation of whatever locks were coming out from Yale and other places and whatnot. And he couldn't get into these conferences because he didn't have the right company set up. So he was thinking about setting up some kind of LLC so he could go to these conferences. And so I suggested to him that he should really just come to Hope.
Right.
That he loves this. He loves kind of learning esoteric knowledge. He taught me some really interesting magic and card tricks, and we talked a lot about lock picking while I was recovering in the room. You just never know who's going to who's going to pop in, and the friends you're going to meet along the way. And I have no doubt in my mind that we'll see this guy at Hope this year.
Well, most everybody that you encounter has curiosity, has interest in many of the things we talk about. Oh. And, you know, I find that so many of them feel that they're incapable of learning, that I'll never understand that stuff. And that's just so wrong because, you know, what you have to realize is that everybody that you perceive to be an expert isn't an expert in a lot of things. Like that surgeon doesn't know how to do various technological things, is asking you for advice, whereas you might feel that I'm not an expert. I just do what I do. And this guy who's a surgeon, he's the real expert. Everybody has this this feeling that they're not, you know, the expert everyone thinks they are in their particular field. But we all know something about something and a lot of things we don't know that we only learn by talking to other people. And that's kind of what the hacking world is. You know, it's sharing knowledge of various things.
It is,
That, you know, we know something about, comparing information, learning things constantly.
Yeah, you know, being open with it, you know, sharing it. And I think, you know, not being afraid to ask these questions. And this innate natural curiosity of, I think that we all have in us is something that is really fostered in our community. And I think we really need to hold on to that. And so I really do hope that, you know, who knows, maybe we'll see both my surgeon and one of my nurses at Hope this year. I think that would be rather cool.
The funny thing is, we were thinking about getting golf carts at the campus to get around, but I don't think we're going to do that. I don't think that's a good idea.
Boy.
Yeah, that's the last thing we need is you hot-dogging it around campus and scaring all the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my son will be there too, so, you know, watch out.
Okay, well, let's not let him drive anything this time. He's 10. Yeah, he doesn't need that extra weight on his conscience.
Yeah, that's
all right.
True.
Okay, so this is an interesting story we didn't get to on the radio show, but maybe we can talk a little bit about it here. It's about the app Bumble, which some of you might have heard about. Bumble, that's a good name for an app. Isn't that what you do when you screw something up? You bumble and, okay, whatever. It's a dating app called Bumble. And apparently it's being used to catch January 6th rioters. Boy, that's something. I bet they didn't see that when they started their company. About 3 years ago, a young professional in the nation's capital was sitting in her apartment after the January 6th attack and saw that the FBI was looking for help identifying the rioters who stormed the U.S. Capitol. So she opened up the Bumble dating app, changed her political views to conservative, and got to swiping. She reached out to several Donald Trump supporters who the app showed were in the Washington area, hoping to elicit confessions from those who had flooded into the city because they believed his lies about the 2020 presidential election. Recently, one of the Bumble users she turned in to the FBI, one of the ones she turned into the FBI, pleaded guilty to assaulting law enforcement officers with chemical spray and a metal whip. Now, all she had to do was ask them more information. Like, they wanted to regurgitate a lot of these ideas to somebody. It seemed like I was a willing participant, she said. It definitely didn't take a lot of arm twisting to get them to start talking about it. Basically, me being like, wow, so cool. Then what? What else? Was pretty much all it took. One of my friends was like, you basically got all these confessions just being like, haha, then what? and these are not the brightest bulbs in the bunch. She stumbled upon one profile. We're going to call this, I guess by his last name, Taki. Started asking him questions, found he was very willing to brag to a woman he just met virtually. NBC News viewed screenshots of messages that Taki and the woman exchanged in the app. She asked, well, you knew all the action. He said, yes, from the very beginning. He sent along a selfie he took shortly after he was pepper sprayed. A point of pride in anyone's adulthood, I guess. In the days after the attack, she continued chatting with him, falsely telling him that she couldn't video chat because she was at a beer garden with friends. She tried to gather more intel, asking him whether he planned to come back for Joe Biden's inauguration. He said, maybe depending on what happens with election, Biden still isn't in office and there is too much criminal stuff to come out. There are many, many patriots ready and willing to head back depending on what happens. It's just, you know, I have somewhat mixed feelings about this because the whole thing about just using apps to turn people in for criminal activity it kind of, you know, sends a chill up my spine because, yeah, this is justified. But how about when it's not justified? How about when it's simply questioning the government or something fairly innocuous like that, which many regimes would use an app like this to get a list of names of people who are basically saying things that they shouldn't be saying. But again, in this case, yeah, I mean, it's a great way to catch people who really don't put much thought into anything, apparently. It's funny. It's definitely amusing to read something like this. But again, be careful who you're talking to, especially if you don't know who they are, especially if it's just something, you know, artificial intelligence could easily be programmed to do this. Go ahead, Gila.
So I think I have a unique take on this, being the only person in our little crew right here who has used the dating apps as a female-presenting person. And I think that's the thing about Bumble that enabled this to work quite as well as it did. Because the hook for Bumble is that women have to send the first message. Hmm. So I think the makeup of the app itself lent itself very well to this kind of personal sting, which also, yeah, if you're just going to open up about this kind of thing to somebody who just messaged you 5 minutes ago, yeah, if you're not going to be careful with your data is going to be careful with you. And no, I love this story. I have loved this story since it started. There has been a movement of people kind of trying to OSINT out the people who were caught in pictures from January 6th.
Right.
And no, I think this kind of initiative is fantastic. And also, dating apps are a cesspool, and any positivity that can come out of it, whether it be a marriage or an arrest of this kind, I think is good.
Just compared a marriage to an arrest. Okay, yeah.
No, I'm just saying positive.
What do you mean?
No, it's positive.
What do you mean to compare?
Wow. I'd love to hear comments from the people who were caught, though. It's like, wow, she fooled me. She didn't tell the truth. She's a criminal, too. I don't know. I would just kind of like to hear that perspective just to complete the picture. But what you said about the woman having to correspond first, yeah, that's interesting, but they don't know it's actually a woman. It could be anybody. You know, it could be a cop. It could be, you know, it could be Bard. We don't know. Go ahead, Rob.
That is true.
Yeah, I mean, this just shows the power of, you know, a form of social engineering, which is something that the hacker world has known about since time immemorial. And yeah, if you can use that as a tool for, you know, what you perceive as good, and in this case, like this person did, yeah, that's great. And I like to see people using their social engineering powers for something constructive. And if you're trying to keep your information to yourself, then, you know, you got to be aware of the various kinds of social engineers that that are out there and the ways in which they could convince you to, say, spill your guts about something terrible you've just done.
The other thing, though, that really concerns me is protecting your identity if you're engaged in something like this, meaning if you're out looking for people who have participated in these actions and you're trying to catch them. If you're not careful, your identity could become known to them and their cohorts, and your life could be in danger as a result of that. So it's really important to not go into this without knowing, A, the risks, and B, the methods of keeping your identity secure. And many, many people don't do this. So it's extremely important to do your research.
Absolutely. The person who did this has managed to remain anonymous, and, you know, great for her, because that, you know, you could very easily become enemy number one to a bunch of very bad people with stuff like this. And there have been journalists and such who had kind of embedded themselves in, you know, fascist groups and things like that, and later reported on it, and their info is out there, and mm-hmm. that's not good for
well,
them.
Well, I mean, if you're a reporter, you're not turning, you shouldn't be turning people in no matter what. You're a reporter. Now, if people can use what you've reported to nail somebody, great, but it shouldn't be you doing it, John Markoff. Well, I mean, that's just the example that comes to mind, but it really, you have to know when not to cross the line. And there's roles for everybody, and certainly reporting is very important. Here's another story, though, before we take some calls. This is about Rite Aid and facial recognition. You guys hear about this? The pharmacy chain Rite Aid misused facial recognition technology in a way that subjected shoppers to unfair searches and humiliation. That's according to a report by the Federal Trade Commission. And it's part of a landmark settlement that could raise questions about the technology's use in stores, airports, and other venues nationwide. Now, federal regulators said Rite Aid activated the face scanning technology, which uses artificial intelligence to attempt to identify people captured by surveillance cameras in hundreds of stores. And this is between 2012 and 2020. And they were doing this in hopes of cracking down on shoplifters and other problematic customers. In the chain's reckless failure to adopt safeguards, coupled with the technology's long history of inaccurate matches and racial biases, this ultimately led store employees to falsely accuse shoppers of theft, leading to embarrassment, harassment, and other harm in front of their family members, coworkers, and friends, according to the FTC. In one case, a Rite Aid employee searched an 11-year-old girl because of a false facial recognition match, leaving her so distraught that her mother missed work. And another employee called the police on a black customer after the technology mistook her for the actual target, a white woman with blonde hair. You know, this software is not ready. It's not ready to be used. It's just, I don't know what the issue is, but it's clearly doing some very, very bad things. Now, Rite Aid said in a statement that it used facial recognition in only a limited number of stores and that it had ended the pilot program more than 3 years ago. As part of a settlement, the company agreed not to use the technology for 5 years, to delete the face images it had collected, and to update the FTC annually on its compliance. Rite Aid system scanned the faces of entering customers. I mean, were any of us aware of this? If you went into a Rite Aid, your face was scanned? I had no idea. They looked for matches in a large database of suspected and confirmed shoplifters. I'd like to see that database. When the system detected a match, it would flag store employees to closely watch the shopper. But the database included low-resolution images taken from grainy surveillance cameras and cell phones, undermining the quality of the matches. Those improper matches would then motivate employees to trail customers around the store or call police, even if they had seen no crime taking place. Rite Aid did not tell customers it was using the technology, and it instructed employees not to reveal its use to consumers or the media. The FTC said Rite Aid contracted with two companies to help create its database of persons of interest, which included tens of thousands of images. Those firms were not identified. I think they should be. And I think we should know about this. You know, I think we should. This is the Rite Aid case. Okay, Rite Aid's not allowed to use this for 5 years. Who is allowed to use this right now? And who is using it right now? You know, if there's some method of scanning your face, is it just as simple as a security camera at the door? I mean, is there a way to know if they are using this, collecting it, saving it, sharing it? These are things that customers have the right to know. And it's yet another reason why people are going to stay away from brick and mortar stores.
Yeah, I think this is going to kill retail, and retail itself, I think, reeling from the specter of e-commerce and just how much shopping and commodity accumulation people do online now instead of going to these places. And you make products inaccessible, treat people with hostility as though they're all prisoners, or they have to be scanned and tracked while they're in the store. That with the relentless feedbacks and surveys and spam email. Uh-huh. I mean, it is the most undesirable thing to do is to have to end up in one of these places. And, it makes society, more tense and less, functional place as a result. People can't get products that they need.
But, you know, all we hear in mass media is how people are stealing and how things have to be locked up because people are stealing. And what are we going to do? It's out of control.
That's all blaming. That's political excuses, in my opinion. And it's blaming people and society and political parties that you disagree with. There's zero responsibility taken by the giant retailers that have been doing a brisk business, putting smaller retailers out of business.
Gila, then Alex.
I think the other piece for me at least, Kyle, to kind of piggyback on that, is it's also a drugstore. It is a drugstore. This is a place where you go to get the most embarrassing shit you need to pick up.
That's true.
And it's this isn't a grocery store. This isn't a clothing store. This is where you go when your body's not working right. This is where you go when you have pain or you're sick or, I don't know, you have to prep for a colonoscopy. There are a lot of things. Like, you are very vulnerable at the drugstore in a way that you're not at literally any other retail place,
right,
which makes this all the scarier. And also, we just have a comment from a listener who says, Rite Aid has never been right. First, they did this on employees, hostility toward workers and customers. This chain has always been known as such. Thank you, Antonio, for that comment.
You know, I was in a CVS not too long ago, and I noticed all the items that were locked up, and I just wanted to buy shampoo, and my shampoo was locked up. But then there was another brand of shampoo next to it that wasn't locked up, and I'm wondering, what is it that makes this shampoo lockable and the other one not? I bought the one that wasn't locked up because I didn't want to ask some guy to come from the other side of the store just to unlock something where I take, you know, a brand of shampoo. It's really inconvenient. It doesn't seem to make much sense. Alex, go ahead.
You know, I think quite reasonably, Rite Aid could be facing private lawsuits as a result of the use of it, or rather the misuse of this technology, because if it led to people being detained in the store falsely and held there for some period of time, that's false imprisonment right there. So I would imagine that, you know, that these private lawsuits are going to be stacking up for Rite Aid at some point. That's not going to be a good look for them. And through that discovery process in those private lawsuits, we might be able to learn a lot more about how they set this up, why they did it, where they did it, and what kind of databases they were using. So, but it just seems like such a bad idea from the outset. But you asked also at the outset of this, Emmanuel, who else is doing this? Is CVS doing this? Is Duane Reade doing this? Well, we don't really know. They don't necessarily have to give you any kind of notice that they're doing this type of thing. We don't have any laws that state that if facial recognition is going to be in use in a store, then there has to be some kind of notice outside the store that they're going to be using it, so that you can choose whether or not you want to have your face scanned and processed by a machine. Some cities may have local ordinances about this. I think San Francisco and a couple of other rather progressive cities have started to regulate the use of this technology, but it's very few and far between. It's certainly not the norm. And you think about what was going on in New York with Madison Square Garden.
Right.
Where Madison Square Garden was totally abusing this and blocking all the lawyers that were involved in any law firm that had ever initiated a lawsuit against Madison Square Garden. They're just essentially banning all of the lawyers. You could work like I do at, you know, at a 700 lawyer firm, and everybody is banned from entering Madison Square Garden. So, I mean, that's a big problem. I know the Attorney General of the state of New York was looking into that, but I don't think we've heard very much about it lately. I'd like to get an update.
I can't believe that they've gotten away with that, because, you know, you talk about people who have bought tickets to concerts and sporting events being ejected from the arena because they work for a law firm that might have been involved with something involving one of the companies or assets of Madison Square Garden. That's insane. That is abuse. And how they got away with that is
hard
beyond
enough.
Me.
It's hard enough to be a lawyer.
Go ahead, Rob.
We don't need to make it any worse.
Absolutely. I mean, it's routine for when a place has video surveillance for there to be a sticker or something on the door. You know, these premises is under video surveillance, you're being recorded, and so on and so on. But there are no provisions for people to be informed that facial recognition technology, all these experimental technologies that don't work very well, that are proved not to work very well, are being used on you, and you may suffer consequences as a result. And you mentioned the shoplifting thing. We spoke at length on this program some time ago about a report by the National Retail Federation about unprecedented levels of shoplifting everywhere, and stores like using that to do things like in CVS locking all the products in the little plastic jail. And so on. And the interesting twist to that story was that on December 4th, it came out that they basically made that up. They made the statistic up in their report. about the unprecedented levels of shoplifting that were going to drive everyone bankrupt. It was just something they invented, and the media jumped on it. The politicians jumped on it. Everyone's talking about the retail epidemic, the shoplifting epidemic, and you know, there was nothing to it, but it was used as an excuse for a lot of crappy stuff, including things like this.
And somehow it got blamed on Democrats for some reason.
Absolutely. And so, you know, people are being punished for being normal consumers who just want to go to the store to buy something. And, you know, no one's coming out ahead in this, I don't think.
I also think it's interesting that Rite Aid filed for bankruptcy a couple months ago. And someone, another listener did point out that Rite Aid has gone bankrupt, is closing stores, and taking down with it a much loved smaller Seattle chain called Bartels that they bought just before going belly up. And there's been some discussion in the chat. Walgreens tried to buy Rite Aid and it wasn't allowed to go through, but they bought some of the stores. And there was a moment in our neighborhood where there was a Duane Reade, a Walgreens, and a Rite Aid all within like 15 steps of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then two of them, and they're all closed now.
Well, didn't Walgreens buy Duane Reade?
Walgreens did buy Duane Reade. Oh, and there was a CVS on the other side of the street. The only one that's still open is the CVS.
Wow. Go ahead, Kyle.
I was just going to point out that a lot of the surveillance systems now, I mean, they can be existing systems that are installed, but people running these systems may be trying new, I guess you would call them modules or plugins or ways of enhancing existing systems. So they might be sending feeds of the surveillance systems in various stores to other systems that evaluate them and analyze them with some of the newer technologies that we've talked about. And that is something that they may be trialing, but it's funny how in this case it was shrouded in secrecy what was essentially a bad product or something that had really bad input.
Mm-hmm.
And it was running live images against them to give this sense, this false sense of trust that made overbearing employees sort of victimize customers who really, as Gila said, just want to get stuff and get out.
Right. And, you know, I think people have the right to know, are you in that database? Has your picture been taken and falsely labeled or even truthfully labeled as somebody who caused trouble somewhere?
Well,
people need to be able to find out these things.
And I think the newness and the trial period that may be going on with some of these cases, depending on if it's a digital system and if they're investing in this kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
they may try one thing 1 year and then tear it down. You know, it's being added on to feeds from cameras, I suspect, that may already exist. So how do you know if the sticker, if it's one third party thing that's scanning stuff 1 week and, right. and then it switches another week, they're not going to tell you anyway. They don't want to. They're not forthright about it in the example of putting a sticker outside the store that there is active surveillance going on. Maybe there's an additional sticker that needs to be clarifying that it's up to a certain standard of machine evaluation or something, so that people know that there are additional enhancements to it, that if you step in here, you could be subjected to things that will include being targeted in false ways in some of the worst cases.
You know, one of the reasons why I believe that we're going to be just embracing more and more privacy intrusions, such as having a personal assistant listening to everything and reporting everything that we say and do. Look at how surveillance cameras have become such a part of our lives. And years ago on this very program, you know, we would basically tell people, hey, there's a surveillance camera on this street. You know, it was a big deal. I remember talking about going to a casino. I think it was in Atlantic City. And I was flabbergasted by the fact that, you know, if I took an escalator, as soon as one surveillance camera disappeared, another one would appear watching me. So I was always on camera. It was such an unusual thing back then. Now it's unusual if you're not on camera, and we're all good with that. We're all accepting this. In fact, people want more surveillance cameras. So, you know, you have to wonder where is this going to go in the years ahead as we're told that things are more and more dangerous and we need more and more protection and we can't possibly do it ourselves? We're just going to give it all up, or at least some people will. Gila?
And there's so much that we already do give up. When Roe v. Wade was overturned and people were starting to talk about not using period tracker apps, and the same thing, you know, I shop at CVS a lot. There's a CVS across the street from our house. We're there all the time. The staff know us. They love us. They come unlock things for us before we ask. But using that CVS card, they know. I can go back into my CVS account and see my receipts from 5 years ago. They know everything I've purchased in however long. And I realize I'm giving them that. They know this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I get coupons and it's nice. But at the same time, yes, I'm voluntarily giving away that piece of my privacy in a way that I don't think about enough.
How do they know your name?
I told them.
Why?
Because I wanted the coupons. Ah. I'm a sucker for coupons, Emmanuel. It's terrible.
Because you wanted the coupons. And that's where it begins.
I'm a sucker for a loyalty program. It's terrible.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, here's some facts. You can have a credit card, and you can have a different name on your credit card. You can ask for a credit card for your spouse, for your child, for your associate. As long as you're responsible for the bill, you can get a credit card in any name you want. You use that credit card, and that's the person that they're tracking, not you. Oh, they'll get your face, yeah, unless you wear a paper bag when you walk in the store. But there are ways of fighting back. They're getting harder. They're, you know, making it harder for you to do things like this. But you can at least not make it so easy, you know?
But at the same time, if you're using a drugstore, say you have your prescriptions through there, you need your info through there to do that.
That's different, yes.
Well,
and then they know you.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I think medical stuff in particular is of greater concern, and it should be on the institutions, the medical and other retailers involved in pharmacy, like specifically people's health information, to protect it to a greater degree because it's so sensitive and has to be associated to the correct person in ways credit cards don't necessarily have to be.
Hey, we should give out the phone number. We haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I'm ready.
802-321-4225 is our phone number. 802-321-HACK. If you have something to share, go ahead, Gila.
Just to point out, we did get a comment from a listener just now who says, as Emmanuel knows, unless it's a legal matter, there's no reason to give a legal name.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
And I hope you heard those air quotes.
Well, I saw the air quotes, but I don't think anybody heard them.
Well, listeners, I'm hoping you heard the air quotes.
Well, the expression you're giving me, Kyle, tells me that it's rebel calling. Let's just get it over with, okay? Let's just rip the Band-Aid off and, hey, Rebel, what's up?
Hi, you knew that it was me. Hold on, let me make sure that my volume is up.
We can sense it in the air. I think everybody can at this point.
All right, well.
We have, just so you know, Rebel, we bought one of those devices that you put on your phone line. That cuts off the phone after 5 minutes. We have no control over it. It just instantly cuts the line. So,
like when Bernie Essenfiber was in jail.
You know what? It's something that we got at a garage sale at a prison didn't need the telecommunications equipment anymore. And yes, after 5 minutes, it'll cut off the phone call. So yes, you have 4 minutes and 25 seconds.
Okay, I'd like to talk about radios, but before I do, I just want to mention that these drugstores and these chains claim that they're losing money. Then why are they donating to the, veterans organizations and, wounded warriors? And, this restaurant chain donated $100,000 to, veterans and warriors, but then they complain when people walk out of their restaurant without paying.
Wait, what? They donate money to a charity, and you're saying they shouldn't complain when people rip them off?
Right, because they shouldn't complain. You know,
why shouldn't they complain about that?
Well, they have money to go give away to charities, just like Walgreens or CVS.
Hold on a second. So if I see you on the street and I rob you of what's in your pocket, you shouldn't complain if you have an equal amount of that money back home. That's your logic.
No, that's not enough.
Well, what's the difference? You're saying it's okay to rip off an establishment if they have a donor jar in the front? Am I not getting this?
No. Okay. The drugstore chains are complaining that people are, you know, shoplifting from them.
Yes.
But, you know, that's, you know, they're losing money and everything. But then they go and give back to, you know, for food for the hungry or for veterans or whatever.
Well, they're still getting ripped off. I mean, how are they not getting ripped? You can still be generous and be ripped off, right?
Well, but if they're going bankrupt, then maybe they shouldn't be so generous.
Well, I'm sure that's good advice that they'll take under advisement. But, you know, it's a lot more complicated than that. Alex, did you have something to say about this?
Well, I did. Just two things in it. And these are parting words of mine, too, because I do have to go to bed here and have a really, really early morning. But I think Rebel might be onto something, I hate to admit it, in that one of the things that always bothered me about these stores, you know, these giant corporations that ask you if you want to make a donation to something or another at the point of checkout. Well, they're in a much better position to donate than anybody generally who's at the checkout line, mm-hmm. right? So do you want to round up to the next dollar and make a donation? Do you want to donate to this? Do you want to donate to that? Well, you know, if they were matching the donation, I would think about it, right? But why should I have to make some donation at the point of sale right there? If they're so concerned about this particular cause, they're the ones that should be making the donation without having to solicit your own customers for it. It's something that always really annoyed me about these massive corporations, especially drugstores, asking for these donations when they themselves are the ones that should be making the donation.
Wow, Alex, I've never heard this side of you, and I bet you don't even tip them.
Tip your cashier, right?
Yeah. No, tip your pharmacist. Otherwise, you might get the wrong drug.
Well, you know, there are as I found out the other day, you know, some good reasons, I think, to be tipping your pharmacist. So, but in any event, Rebel, was lovely to hear your voice. I'm going to peel off, guys, and get to sleep. But it was lovely to see you all. I hope that we're on the air next week.
Yeah, it'd be nice. And, maybe listeners can help add to the chorus of people that want us on the air more. Because, you know, it's hard to reconnect after we're only on every couple of weeks, and we miss so many stories.
Yeah. Well, if not next week, then the week thereafter for sure.
Yeah.
But I'll hopefully see you all soon. And
yes. Well, good luck with the operation tomorrow. It won't be live streamed, I take it.
No, it won't be live streamed. Oh. Yes, thankfully.
Yeah, recorded.
But I'll update everybody. And thanks everyone for your kind wishes and good words. Thank you very much.
All right.
Have a good night, everyone. Thank you. Bye.
All right, Rebel, you're down to about 2 minutes left. Yes, go ahead.
I'd like to talk about radios, like how things like. I'm going next week to Arizona and California and all that. I know my friend's father is in California, a ham radio operator. How did the repeaters work? Like, a relative of mine used to work for the New York City Police Department. He was a police officer. So I asked him how the radios work. How does one police officer contact another or contact the precinct? He didn't know. I mean, he just knew that he pressed the button and, you know. So do you know how, like, when they let go of the button after they finish speaking, there's a tone like a dee-doo when you hear, like, police radios, even transit radios. Is that the repeater doing that?
That's some way of addressing the path that's going to take to get to the appropriate place, whether it be the dispatcher or out to other people listening. So those tones matter, which, by the way, are going to be encrypted soon, so we won't be able to even hear those. It's pretty basic, you know, using handheld radios to communicate to a central source, which boosts the signal so that it can be heard over a much wider range.
Now if you tune into a repeater on ham radio, you have to tune into a different frequency to listen to, like, police or fire or emergency services. Is it just different frequencies or something?
Yeah, everything has a different frequency, obviously.
So they're going to be at the HOPE conference this year. Is there going to be a thing about the radio?
I would imagine so. They're, you know, we definitely have a strong ham radio contingent, and I look forward to, you know, seeing what they can put together. Certainly it's space to do something really cool.
Yeah. I'll bring my portable CB radio and, you know.
All right. Look out, everybody. Radio, okay. That'll be fun. That'll be fun.
You know, that doesn't use repeaters. Let's say, and antennas, and, you know, it's really complicated on how antennas work, and, you know,
I'm sure we'll have workshops on all of this, and you can learn quite a bit. So anyone interested in this, broadcasting, ham radio, whatnot, Hope Conference is definitely going to be a place to be.
I wish Bernie S. would call in.
Maybe
Bernie
he will.
He knows all about this.
He does, and there are many people out there that know a ton. And we look forward to hearing from all of them. Final words, Rebel, because your time is pretty much up.
Okay. All right. So I'll be in Arizona next week. I'll go to the 2600 meeting in Phoenix.
That sounds like fun. Let us know how it is. And if we're on the air, definitely call in.
Yeah, of course. And then I'll be in California the week after.
Okay. All right. Everybody in California, you heard that, so you can't say we didn't tell you.
All right. Let's see. So... I guess
that means you're going to have a rental car.
He's going to have a rental car. It's probably going to be one of those.
Yeah, a simple rental car this time.
A simple one.
No Cadillacs.
Cadillac,
no sports car, no, you know, technology, you know. And,
didn't he have a Tesla last time?
And if we're not on air next week, we cannot help him find a place to charge it. So don't get an electric car, Rebel. We can't help you.
Yeah.
You know, I do. And, you know, it's easier to just, you know, look on the app and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just. You know, the Nissan Leafs and the Chevy Volt, they're a lot more user-friendly than the Teslas.
Okay, well, these are important things to share with people.
Or a Suzuki, you know?
Or a bicycle, how about that?
Or an Isuzu.
Yeah. Well, I have an electric bicycle. Let's
tool around the Southwest with that. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, how am I going to get it there?
All right, well, safe travels.
Golf carts.
Safe travels, Rebel.
Yeah, steer clear of those.
Yeah, and keep in touch.
Have a good New Year.
Yeah.
Yes. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gayla.
I do have a couple comments from the chat that harken back to the discussion about credit cards, legal names, things like that.
Uh-huh.
A friend with a non-legal Facebook name was required to submit proof. I reminded them Facebook isn't the government. You don't owe them anything.
No.
One doctor driver's license photo later.
Wait, whoa. Hold on. You have to show Facebook ID to get a name on. I don't understand this.
I believe there was a time they were trying to keep people on legal names and you had to submit photo proof. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. If they thought your name was fake.
If they thought your name was fake.
But your name can be fake. I mean, okay, back when it was just for universities, Facebook was just for college students at one point. Yeah, you had to prove you were a college student or affiliated with a university. But past that, they should not be asking for proof of any kind of identity, fake name or non-fake name.
I am correct, by the way. This listener just clarified in the chat. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And someone else points out that you can get a credit card in any name you want. Mm-hmm. And also, if you don't want to give someone or a merchant your real credit card number, you can get a temporary one.
That's right.
And give it to them, which is true. I actually got a temporary credit card number that started with a 9.
That
was crazy.
They'll know it's a weird credit card if you do that. But I think there's other ones that begin with 5s and 4s and, you know, the usual MasterCard Visa thing. But they only work for a particular amount of time, you know, just limited debit cards, things like that. There are ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's always ways.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right. We have another phone call and, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi. You were talking about, some places have, laws for notices. I believe New York City is one of them. I read some article and they were talking about the stores that had it. And there was a store like that around my area, so I went out and checked to see. They did, in fact, have a little notice saying that they had this. And if you wear a hood and you walk in there and you just look in the opposite direction from the security camera, you could avoid having your face taken by that security camera at the entrance.
Yeah, but everybody in the store is not going to be looking at you because you're going to be scaring them.
Scaring them?
Well, you know, walking in, not making eye contact, wearing a hood over your face. I don't know. It might give people assumptions that you're up to something.
Well, I wear a hoodie in cold weather. I don't think that's particularly sinister. And it's just the security camera that's at the, that little tiny bit of a room before you get into the store proper.
That's the one you see, though. How many more are there? They don't have to disclose where they are.
Well, I asked them, is that the one? And they said yes. I called them up on the phone about it. So.
Well, they might not tell the truth. I don't know. I'm just more cynical about this.
Yeah, they might not tell the truth. Yeah. This is true.
You could wear a disguise.
Yeah, you could do that.
I'm for this. I think if you feel like a place is overbearing with it, you should be able to dress how you want to. Some places do try to enforce face covering, banks specifically, for obvious reasons. But I think you're more power to you. If you identify a place as consistently filming you and you don't want to be filmed, just don't look at it.
Yeah, I phoned them and I expressed my dislike of this process, so... You know, I did my bit for expressing the public point of view, get rid of this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if we were able to survive 20 years ago without this, why suddenly do we need it now? What's the difference? What changed?
And if they get loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of information about everyone, it's too much to be processed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I remember once I was visiting some other city, and I needed to get a straw hat to protect myself from the sun. And so I was with some other people, and they let me use their loyalty card to get a discount for the hat I was buying. So my hat purchase went on their loyalty card to help throw off the profile that the store is using on them, because it was actually somebody else's purchase that went on to their card.
That's how it starts. It's one small thing, but now they think that this person has a hat when they don't. So the data is tarnished.
Again, be like, this is like Bruce Lee, like be water. You can be noise, you know? And the more of this you do, I felt like loyalty card things are great. You know, people should be trading and mixing them around to throw them off, and I don't know how that would work ideally, but if you have a neighbor and you both shop at the same place, you know, you could easily do that, and it's there's no harm in it, and you're not obligated to give that system they're making up any kind of accurate information. You can use it how you please.
Yeah, and if you share it with your neighbors, all of a sudden you have this person that's going around buying a whole lot of stuff all the time, all over the place.
You'll be getting coupons. You'll be getting all kinds of things that...
Well, somebody will be.
You wouldn't ordinarily buy, and discounts maybe on things that you do appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they just asked me for my phone number. I don't have to even give them my card, but I give them my real phone number.
What, do they call you, or do they just keep that on record?
No, they don't.
So you give them a fake number. You give them a number that's always busy, or it's disconnected or something.
No, my phone number is connected with my loyalty card for the discount and such. But I wanted to mention what gets me, all these different places, you know, whether it's for prescriptions or medical things or all sorts of innocuous stuff, they're always, before they will answer the slightest question, they will ask me for my name, address, phone number, zip code, blah, 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 blah. I have to go through endless identification questions,
mm-hmm.
security questions, so that they can protect my privacy. And it drives me bonkers.
Yeah, that is something. I had a similar experience not too long ago where I got this emailed doctor's bill. And, you know, it was a very innocuous name. It was a name I did not recognize at all, actually, because it wasn't the same name as the doctor. It was whatever company or whatever. And I didn't know if it was real. And they didn't send me a paper bill, even though that's the only way I pay bills, if I get a paper bill. So basically, they gave me a link to go to. And I went to the link to see if there was anything there that might identify further. It wanted more private information from me, which I refused to give it because how do I know this isn't some kind of a scam? So I said, I'm not going to pay this until they do something else. Fortunately for my health insurance, I was able to see a breakdown of things that they had accepted and denied and what I was responsible for. And I was able to match the figure they were asking for with the figure from the health insurance. I was able to figure out who it was, but not with any help from them. And I just wonder how many times something like that happens.
What bugs me also is they will ask me for my date of birth, and I won't give that out over the phone. Or they'll ask me for my Social Security number, which is only supposed to be used for Social Security purposes.
That's right.
Not as a universal identification, and I won't give it. And it's like no shoes, no shirt, no service. If I won't give out my birth date or my Social Security card, they won't deal with me, and I'm cut off from getting proper service.
Yeah, it's true tragedy, I think, for the consumer with a lot of these security measures, however they're introduced, and a lot of them wacky and third party and not actually the core business of the place you're bringing your business to. But they're opportunistic companies, and they're taking advantage of the concerns that retailers have, and in the measures specifically around identity protection and stuff, they are becoming overbearing. It is creating this world where we're constantly verifying and constantly checking, and it may not actually be making us as safe as we think it is, because just to what you said, because the very fact that you're constantly recounting it and being prompted for this information, the more they're using it and depending on it to bolster whatever scheme for protecting data this week, It just makes more aggravation. And the fact that they can't find something consistently, the dynamic nature of it, it further disillusions consumers who now have to learn a new scheme or a new way of doing it. And it is really, really disruptive to the feel of these transactions. And it's important commerce, but if you make it such a torturous experience, you're driving people away from it, and there's loss to that, loss of business in that.
All these entities that you wind up giving your private information to, one of them is going to screw up and get a data breach, and then your private info is exposed thanks to them, not thanks to you. So be careful who you give your information to, and I think you're doing a good job of that.
If I ask what's the cost of this service, They won't just tell me. They have to find my account first and ask me all this identification information just to give me not private information about their company.
Right, right. Well, you can always say you're a new person or something and start over.
I have a question for you. I tried getting this RFID proof wallet holder thing.
Okay.
You know, you put your passport in and your passport information chip can't be scanned through it. Do these things work? How do I know if this thing is...
Look at reviews of the product and see if people have used it and if it works. There are good ones, there are bad ones, but they can be very effective.
Uh-huh.
They're okay. Good. They're good to use if you find a reputable one. The sleeves are becoming something that are... included when you're issued some of these RFID cards, because the people issuing those cards know that you're going to be walking around with something that could be energized and read at a distance, even with higher powered readers. So to that end, if you find sleeves and you have a lot of these cards, definitely do what you can to protect one, at least the ones that are most vital and exposed. In other words, will be, you know, moving over payment terminals and stuff.
All right, we're going to move on. Thanks for your call, and have a happy new year.
Same to you.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. And I think we have time for one more call. 802-321-4225. Maybe two, if they're short. We'll see. 802-321-4225 is our telephone number. I didn't have anything else to say. I just wanted to get the phone number out. Well, there's the phone.
While we're waiting,
go ahead.
Just a really quick mention of a project I saw some time ago that the caller reminded me of, which was the Camera Shy hoodie, which is a hoodie with high-powered infrared LEDs sewn into it to block your face from being seen by cameras because all they see is a bright light because they can see infrared light. That's the idea. So look up the Camera Shy Hoodie project. There you can find instructions on how to make your own.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make more and more footage on surveillance systems, just have glowing beings of light moving around, you're doing good in the world, I think.
That's the goal. Okay, we have a call?
Yes, there's someone on the line.
Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about the logistics of ticket sales for Hope. I got locked out this last ticket opportunity, and I didn't get a chance to get a ticket.
Many people are in the same boat, so it's don't feel alone there. It will open up again. It will open up again in early January. I think the 10th is the date we're talking about, which is 2 weeks from today. And you should have a better shot then.
Okay. Just moving forward, though, will it be every time you do it, will it be like just a few hundred on sale and they'll sell out in like 5 minutes? I mean, do I have a shot?
It's going to be a bigger batch this time. I don't think it's been decided how many at a time. It depends on a number of factors. We don't want to obviously have too many people. We want to have enough people to cover expenses, obviously. But it should be a much better shot for you in January, in my opinion.
Part of it is also we're standing it up and we want to make sure it's working the right way and everybody's getting what they expect. So we don't want to start out with too large a batch. So definitely stick around with us or stay tuned.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot more information released on the site in the next couple of weeks. So we'll be able to, because we're opening up speaker submissions as well as workshop submissions and all kinds of other projects. So it's just, we have our hands full with all sorts of other things. But
will it still be the same price, 200? I mean, I didn't mean to mention it, but will it still be the same price as we get closer?
The price in December was the lowest price, so it will be slightly higher than that. And that's another thing that we haven't decided on yet, exactly how much higher it has to be. It won't be significantly higher, so but it won't be as low.
Okay, but will it, if I can't get it on in January, as we get closer to the conference, will the price go up as you get closer, or do you expect to be able to keep it?
I can't answer that because we don't know what's going to happen between now and then. It's possible, but it's not definite.
Okay.
All right.
So you said, yeah.
It is something we wanted to remain competitive and basically keep the price as low as we possibly can, but we do want people to look forward to those announcements and get in as quickly as they can.
Right. We've had a lot of feedback. Can I just ask, what was your experience? Did you try at the appointed time or did you try after the appointed time?
No, I tried at the time and I think I just missed it. I mean, okay. Obviously it's very hot. It's like Taylor Swift. I mean,
I don't know about that, but
it's really popular.
That's nice to hear.
Well, the system has got.
No, I mean, it is.
It's become better functioning as far as
we did not get any complaints about people who had tickets in their cart. And then the tickets disappeared when they were checking out because we had a lot of complaints about that in previous years. And this time, I think Shopify fixed that so that if you got them in your cart, you were able to keep them in your cart as long as you checked out.
Actually, I did get something. I did have something in the cart, and then I clicked and it did disappear.
So really?
That,
okay.
That was my experience.
That's the first I've heard of that then. That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, so I don't know what happened, but... So you said it'll be on hope.net, the announcement.
Yeah.
You'll have the date and the time.
There's going to be a lot of information added.
The 10th.
That's what I was told. I'm not exactly sure if that was the date. It might even be on the website, but there'll be more specific info.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I'm not working now, so I'm hoping that I can get it soon because if I can't get it this time, I have. Just, I have to watch my disposable income because I'm not working. So I'm hoping that it's not significantly raised if I can't get it.
No, like I said, it's not going to be a significant increase, but it won't be as low as in December.
Okay.
All right.
Do you have all the the speakers lined up, or you still we
haven't opened the speaker submission part yet. So no, we have no speakers yet. Basically, yeah, the December thing is for people that are you know, who want to buy tickets without knowing anything about what's going to happen, because it hasn't actually been organized yet. But that's what we're starting right now. In fact, that's what we're working feverishly around the clock on. And you'll get more and more information as the weeks and months go by.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know if it's feasible or not, but just for keynote speakers, it would be great if you could get like Stuart Brand or Stacey Horn. You know, I don't know if they're available, but I think they'd be cool to have.
Or, yeah, definitely. I agree.
Howard Rheingold or Kevin Kelly from Wired.
Yeah, a lot of West Coast people I hear there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Stacey Horn did Echo.
Echo in New York City. Hangout. That's right, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you get some interesting people.
Oh, we will. We will. We always do, and it's going to be fun.
And we.
All right, well, I'll try harder. I mean, I'll try to... I'll just keep my fingers crossed and hope that I get it.
You'll get in. This time. I have every faith that you'll get in. I do. Kyle, did you
have something? Yeah, we appreciate your interest and hope to see you there. And you can get involved as well if you have ideas or want to be a part of the organization at all and volunteering. But please spread the word. Okay. We're getting all of that together right now, and we want to make sure everybody knows when things are happening.
Yeah.
Okay, and I did send an email about that request about possibly trying to record the workshops. I know you said logistically that might be
hard. Yeah. So we are working on that. So we need to coordinate all kinds of AV challenges and things like that. So always looking for volunteers to help and various other projects. There's so many things going on.
Will that guy Jolly from the Internet Society, will he be working with you?
Oh, I sure hope so.
Jolly McPhee?
Yeah, he's awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, have a happy new year. And like I said, I'll keep my fingers crossed that I get a ticket.
Okay. Thanks. We will too. Thanks.
Bye.
Well, I guess that's going to be it for tonight, right?
That was a great call. Yeah. Thanks for calling in, everyone. And listening and on all the interest.
Yeah, putting up with us.
Absolutely. And in case we're not on next week, I will remind folks that 2600 meetings, the first one of 2024, will be happening Friday of next week. Not this week, but Friday of next week. And you'll want to check that out. I actually heard from an attendee of the one here in New York City that they are going to give a tutorial on chainmail, building your own chainmail. So I'll put some information about that up on the New York City 2600 site soon.
We have tutorials now? Gathering in a food court.
Wait.
It is, but somebody's going to bring some stuff and bring a demonstration, put a demonstration together.
Okay. What is happening to society that we're making chainmail? I mean, you're not talking about correspondence at all, and I know it.
If you want some chainmail, you know, do you want to go buy some chainmail at the local chainmail store, or do you want to know how to make your own, just in case you're curious?
You know, if you have a new cast iron skillet and you want to make a chainmail thing to clean it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why it's called that, but boy, that's confused a lot of people over the last couple of decades.
Chainmail?
Yeah, people think they're getting chainmail, and they actually are getting.
Oh yeah,
well, you know, whatever. I don't want to get into it.
So you can make like a little scrubber. That's good. I was thinking like something to go swimming with sharks. I think that has to be titanium.
Okay, well, you know what? We're gonna try and not break any limbs this New Year's. Hopefully, Alex will take that advice as well, and we'll gather again either next week or in 2 weeks,
sometime in the new year.
Yes.
And thank you to everybody who joined us tonight on YouTube, 45 people right now, which is amazing. And this has been, I think, a 2023 innovation for us, and it's been great. So I hope this is something we continue into the new year.
That's right. This is the last show of 2023. Last one.
Last show of 2023.
Wow. All right. Well, this year coming up, it's going to be a doozy. I can just tell you that. You know what? Oh my God! I just realized we forgot to do what we were going to do on the show tonight.
We totally forgot.
We were going to talk about the things that we wanted for the next year and things that we remember from 2023. And we had so much material that we totally didn't even get to that. Maybe next time. How about that? Because I'm sure as hell not doing it now.
Yeah, whether it's next week or the week after, it will be our New Year show, I think, and we can do our thing then.
It's Alex's fault. He broke his leg, and that threw me off.
Yeah.
That'll teach him.
No consideration.
What a story.
Yeah. All right, folks. Have a good night. We'll see you in the new year. OTH at 2600.com. Good night.